Tehran says it's taken a series of initial measures in response to a recent anti-Iran resolution by the International Atomic Energy Agency. Hundreds of Palestinians hold a funeral for a teenager who succumbed to his injuries hours after being shot by the Israeli forces. And Turkish president says Ankara could launch a ground operation in northern Syria following a deadly rocket strike on a Turkish border town. Live from our Tehran headquarters, this is World News. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. A top story this hour, Tehran saying that a series of initial measures have been taken in response to a recent anti-Iran resolution by the International Atomic Energy Agency. The foreign ministry spokesman says the details of the steps will be announced by the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran. Nasser Kanani says that the West's support for the recent anti-Iran resolution by the IAEA indicated the will to hinder technical collaboration between Tehran and the UN agency. According to Kanani, Western countries were expected to avoid such politically motivated measures, considering Iran's positive and constructive interaction with the IAEA. The resolution adopted on Thursday urges Tehran to fully cooperate with the agency's probe into uranium traces at three alleged undeclared sites in Iran. Tehran says the IAEA is basing its statements on information fabricated by Israel. The Tehran University lecturer Fuad Izzati says that the West's confrontational approach will backfire in the long run because it gives Iran cold feet and voluntary cooperation with the UN nuclear agency.
You know, I think the real motive behind this resolution is actually to force Iranian officials to stop cooperating with the agency. They want to take the case to the UN Security Council, and by passing this type of politically motivated resolutions, they want to basically create a scene where Iran, given the fact that these type of resolutions are politically motivated, it stops its cooperation with IAEA. In practice, what will happen is that Iran will follow NPT guidelines when it comes to IAEA cooperation, but Iran will do the absolute minimum, nothing more than what is required. Yeah, so this type of practice is actually going to backfire in the long run, because the access, the extra access that Iran was providing under the JCPOA is going to disappear totally, and it's going to be the other side that's going to lose the access that they had more than what Iran was supposed to do. And if they push further, I think Iranian officials will take extra measures to make sure that anti-Iran resolutions has a cost for the countries that sponsor.
Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it's performed fresh drone and missile strikes against neighboring Iraqi Kurdistan region. The IRGC says that the attacks target the remaining positions of terrorists and separatist groups operating against Iran. The force says the raids hit locations deep into the Kurdistan region, destroying their targets. According to the IRGC, the attacks dealt a heavy blow to the terrorists. The force carried out three rounds of such strikes in northern Iraq recently. Iran says that Iraq's federal government has a responsibility to prevent any threats coming from the Arab countries' northern Kurdistan region. The head of London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission says that the Iraqi Kurdistan region has become a main base for organizing terrorist operations against Iran.
The Kurdistan region has become one of the main bases of this type of operation. And we saw even evidence in past of assassination of scientists and so forth. Again, been sort of organized, coordinated, and implemented through this region. So Iran has been asking over and over from Kurdistan government to make sure that their territory is not going to be used in this way, which is unlawful and against international law. But for whatever reason, be it the fact that they're not willing or they're not capable, we are not seeing action. And indeed, now the Iran seem to have realized that the only way forward is to take actions themselves and stop this sort of insertion and training bases and sort of center for coordinating acts of terrorism.
Now, on top of other hardships, the poor in Afghanistan have difficulty providing fuel to warm their shelters in wintertime. A number of them have received wood and coal from the Iranian embassy in Kabul. Abdullah Mirzada reports from the African capital.
People have gathered here to receive winter fuel in form of coal and wood distributed by Iranian embassy in Kabul to warm the cold days of their lives. Najiba and Tahira, who take care of their children all alone, cry out the problems of the cold winter.
I don't have a supporter and my husband has passed away. It's five of us in my family, all of whom are jobless. Currently, we live in a rental house. We could really use such aids and hope it continues, especially in winters.
It is a hard winter, especially for us who don't have the primary needs of our lives. I have small children. I literally don't have anything to warm my home. I work hard to feed my seven family members, but still can't meet our needs.
Almost all who receive relief aids are widows and orphans, most of whom burn plastic, tires, and other waste materials to warm their houses and sometimes cook food. The happiness is noticeable as these widows can provide a warm home for their orphans. The number of these families can reach up to 1,000.
Well, we are prepared to distribute fuel to 1,000 families. The fuel is firewood and coal. We give each family a package of almost 200 kilograms. It isn't much, but it could be enough for almost a month. We are hoping to be able to continue such activities in the coming months also.
With the arrival of winter, concerns about the situation of the people of Afghanistan have intensified. The arrival of winter and warming houses has added to the daily problems of the poor in Afghanistan. Although aid is being provided to some people, there are still many who spend their nights in cold weather. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Hundreds of people have attended a funeral for a Palestinian teen who succumbed to his injuries hours after being shot by Israeli regime forces. The mourners carried a body of 19-year-old Mahmoud Al-Sadi, who was shot during an Israeli raid on a neighborhood in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. The troops also injured four people and arrested a number of others during the attack. Meantime, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, in a statement, hailed the resistance fighters standing against the regime, saying that the enemy has no place on Palestinian land. Also, the Palestinian Minister of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates condemned the killing and a recent beating of a Palestinian child by Israeli settlers in Al-Khalil. The minister described it as a brutal attack by terrorist settlers and part of the regime's policy to kill Palestinian children and deprive them of their right to life. Palestinian activist Muti Abu Musaba joined us a short while ago with his take on Israel's bloodshed against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip.
The Israeli occupation forces, since the beginning of this year, 2022, have killed more than 200 or around 200 Palestinians so far, which actually marks the highest number since 2018 so far. And as the whole world yesterday marked the International Children's Day, it's noteworthy to mention that Israel, since the beginning also of this year, 2022, slaughtered in a cold blood more than 45 Palestinian children, in addition to the detention of 770 Palestinian children as well So we are talking about continuous crimes committed against the Palestinian people day and night, left, right, and center, amid the abhorrent silence of the international community. And putting this in the context of the latest development regarding the results of the Israeli elections, this means that we are witnessing an incremental change and transform of the Israeli community as a whole at the level of the government and at the level of the community itself towards the religious extremism against the Palestinian people. So we, according to this latest and developments, we are expecting more crimes to be committed, more settlements to be built, more Palestinian lands to be stolen and occupied.
Turkey says it could launch a ground operation in Syria following a deadly strike by Kurdish militants on a Turkish border town. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says the operation against the outlawed PKK and its Syrian affiliate, the YPG, will not be limited to aerial raids. Erdogan warned that those who violate Turkey's territorial integrity will pay the price. According to local officials, the attacks hit a school, two houses, and a truck near a border crossing in Gaziantep province, killing three people. This a day after Ankara performed deadly air raids on bases of Kurdish militants in northern Syria and Iraq. The offensive was in retaliation for a bomb attack in Istanbul a week ago that left six people dead. Ankara blamed the PKK for the attack, but the Kurdish militant group denied involvement. The death toll from an earthquake that rattled Indonesia's main island of Java has risen to 162. Officials say hundreds more have been injured and thousands displaced after the quake toppled buildings and triggered landslides. The earthquake is reported to have been 5.6 in magnitude. Indonesia's meteorological agency is warning residents near the quake site to stay outside buildings and watch out for more tremors. Indonesia experiences frequent seismic and volcanic activities. The country is located on the so-called Pacific Ring of Fire, where tectonic plates often collide. Negotiators from around 200 countries at the COP27 UN Climate Summit in Egypt took a historic step of agreeing to help climate victims. However, they failed to reach a consensus to curb on fossil fuels or greenhouse gas emissions that are the main causes of global warming.
Negotiators from nearly 200 countries at the COP27 UN Climate Summit in Egypt agreed to set up a loss and damage fund meant to help vulnerable countries cope with climate disasters. They also agreed the globe needs to cut greenhouse gas emissions nearly in half by 2030. The agreement also reaffirmed the goal of keeping global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. However, for the 27th time, the UN climate talks have failed to directly address the biggest driver of the climate crisis, the production of gas, oil, and coal. This is amid calls for the phase-out of all fossil fuels inside the conference walls and beyond. More than 80 countries had supported a proposal to phase down the use of fossil fuels at the UN Climate Summit. Ultimately, an attempt to address the biggest source of the planet warming emissions that are causing the climate crisis ended in a fiasco as the participants only agreed to phase down polluting coal power and phase out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies. That's after a number of oil and gas producing nations, led by Saudi Arabia, blocked a key proposal to phase out all fossil fuels, not just coal. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said it is more than frustrating to see overdue steps on mitigation and the phase-out of fossil energies being stonewalled by a number of large emitters and oil producers. Addressing this summit, the European Union's climate chief, Frans Timmermans, said the EU was disappointed with the final outcome of the summit.
What we have in front of us is not enough of a step forward for people and planet. We should have done much more.
The UN chief, Antonio Guterres, reacted with saying that the COP27 climate talks had fallen short in pushing for the urgent, drastic carbon cutting needed to tackle global warming.
Our planet is still in the emergency room. We need to drastically reduce emissions now and this is an issue this COP did not address.
Environmental campaigners labeled the COP27 summit as yet another monumental failure to tackle climate crisis. Activists blasted richer countries for not doing more to limit carbon emissions. They say the US, EU, UK, and others came to the summit with empty words, hollow promises, and the refusal to take responsibility for having set the planet on fire and destroying millions of lives and livelihoods.
Now, some voices have labeled this year's summit as a failure, led down by disappointing outcomes, constrained by politics, hypocrisy, and unprecedented divisions. But the scale of change now happening to our planet is hard to ignore. But despite calls for action, developed countries that are the lead producers of emissions have opted to prioritize power, politics, and profit over the planet. The Kremlin has promised to bring to justice those behind an alleged execution of Russian prisoners of war in Ukraine. The Kremlin spokesman says that Russia itself will be looking for perpetrators. Dmitry Peskov says that Russia will also do anything possible to draw attention to what it calls a war crime. Moscow last week accused Ukrainian soldiers of executing more than 10 Russian prisoners of war, and that after footage circulating on social media showed the summary execution of Russian servicemen. Moscow says Ukraine's Western backers are turning a blind eye to its military abuses. The UN Human Rights Office says it's looking into the footage, calling for allegations to be investigated promptly and in full. Early this week, a UN report accused both Russia and Ukraine of abusing and torturing POWs. Several members of an Italian neo-Nazi organization have been arrested in the central part of the country while plotting terrorist attacks against civilian police targets. The organization is affiliated with a Ukrainian neo-Nazi paramilitary group called Azov Battalion. Max Civili has a report from Rome.
Four members of an Italian neo-Nazi organization known as the Order of Hagal were arrested on Tuesday in the cities of Naples, Caserta, and Avellino, about 200 kilometers south of Rome. At different phases within the process of the investigation, the police collected numerous Nazi and fascist propaganda material, bullets, weapons, tactical clothing, and other elements that convinced Italy's judiciary to make charges against members of the Order of Hagal. The police investigation was launched in 2019 when authorities suspected neo-Nazi groups were plotting violent acts in Italy. Today, members of the neo-Nazi organization, the Order of Hagal, have been accused of planning to carry out terrorist attacks on civilian and police targets.
Investigative activity showed that the neo-Nazi organization placed in Italy and Nazi-Ukrainian military groups, such as the Azov Battalion, Misanthropic Division and Centuria, have been in contact to conduct paramilitary training. In fact, diplomas were given for completing the training.
The Azov Battalion is a neo-Nazi paramilitary group that has been incorporated into the Ukrainian National Guard and is currently fighting against Russian troops. The Order of Hagal is an organization based in the area surrounding Naples. Authorities, however, suspect that the group may have subdivisions across Italy. The Order of Hagal has established operational ties to the Azov Battalion. Besides Nazism and anti-Semitism, it promotes subversion and white supremacy culture.
Some of the neo-Nazis' organization's members were trained in Ukrainian camps with the purpose of conducting the military operations in Italy. The group was recruiting among disadvantaged Italians, often young people, people who have a negative, incomplete view of society and can be easily manipulated. The Order of Hagal maintains direct and frequent contacts with its members over Telegram.
An additional member of the neo-Nazi Order of Hagal organization remains Paul, warned that the high availability of weapons during the current conflict in Ukraine will result in the proliferation of illicit arms in the post-conflict phase. Max Civili, Rome.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, types of bad manner. In today's lesson, we will talk about the types of bad manners in Islam and which we need to avoid in our Islamic lifestyle. We know that there are the consequences that a person who has bad manner he has to face. And from the consequences, if I want to just count some of them, is that the person who has bad manner, it is said that he will go to the hellfire. He will face the hellfire. He will have the hard time in the grave. He will not have friends in this world. And obviously, he will be someone who does not get the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And there are many other things. And that's why Quran is emphasizing on having a good manner. And what the things that we need to consider is that we should know what does come under the bad manner. Some of the things that we can just mention is, number one, is that if someone insists on the sin or doing evil or bad deeds, this is one of the bad manners. That Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, who has created us, He wants us to not to perform bad deeds. He does not want us to perform evil deeds or to perform sin in our life. Therefore, someone who insists and keep repeating the bad deeds and he does that, this is from the bad manners. Number two is being ungrateful towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the people who help us, or maybe they have done a favor for us. Therefore, the one who is ungrateful to others is also known as being the having the bad manners. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the types of bad manners in the Islam and which we need to avoid in the Islamic lifestyle. Therefore, we mentioned two of them, that the one who keeps perform the bad evils, and the second one was to be ungrateful. Now, the third thing that comes under the list of the bad manners, we can say like being arrogant. And this arrogance is something that brings the bad manner in our life, which makes us to be bad amongst the people. Number four is being suspicious towards other. The suspicion, or the being suspicious towards the other, always thinking bad about the people. And this also is something from the bad manners.
And the next thing is being jealous of others. Why we should be jealous of others? We should be thankful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for what we have. Therefore, those who are jealous towards the others, remember that this is the sign of having the bad manner. The next thing which we can count is having a bad language, talking to people in a bad way. For example, some people have the habit of abusing others or using the non-ethical words or bad words against someone. So this is not good that to talk with them in that way. The next thing is to be a liar. If someone lies a lot, that is also amongst the bad manners. And after that, the thing which we can count is the one who swears wrongly. This is also from the bad manner. And on top of list, we can say that sometimes we see people who basically accuse people, who make scandals for the people, and it's a wrong thing. And after that, backbiting is one of the important things. And then we can look at the matter of someone who is basically teasing his neighbors. Teasing his neighbors is also something that is not good. And it's been known as, you know, from the bad manners. And after that, we know that there are some people who reproach, who look for the faults of the others. And this is also from the bad manners. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran,
hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Hey, come on. Pick up the phone. Hello? Hello? You're there?
The number you've dialed does not answer. Please try later.
Oh, gosh. My phone ran out of battery. What can I do now? I am now in a forest. It is called Jig Forest, literally Scream Forest, as its name suggests. The Scream Forest is where frightening screaming sounds can be heard by nights. Travelers who have stepped in the woods would say they have heard the screaming sounds of a woman who is probably burning in fire. I know it seems scary, but my friends and I have decided to stay here until night to see whether this story is true. But unfortunately, I am lost here. Oh, maybe heading toward this river can help me. I am really scared. In the outskirts of Mashhad city in Khorasan Razavi province, northeastern Iran, there lies a forest that resembles any other by the days, but scares the hell out of its visitors when the night falls. As its name suggests, the Scream Forest is where frightening screaming sounds can be heard by nights. The scarier side of this place is the sounds that start with twilight of the air and stop with the sunrise. Some locals who live there believe that the screams heard from the forest are due to demons roaming, but the reality behind this strange sound is that these sounds are essentially the sounds of crickets. Some residents also consider the terrifying noises to be from locusts that invade the area and take refuge in trees at night, while others have blamed unknown factors including climate change. Experts say the noise is related to a special type of cricket. In fact, in the rainy years, when there is a lot of water and the river does not dry up or become dehydrated, these crickets attack the village and hide in the trees and plants. About 3,000 crickets may sit on each tree. All of these crickets are on the banks, just 2 kilometers of the river, and a large number of them make a singing sound like the sound of a screaming and howling. These crickets survive for up to 40 days and then die. In here, and I don't like it at all. There are some myths about this forest, like being cursed, a place where demons reside. Oh, I don't want to think about them. I wish my friends were here so we could erect a tent, set fire, had tea. Oh, I said fire. Some say the sound of the screams is like the sound of a woman burning alive in the fire. Oh no! Oh no! It's dark. Mina! Shima! Arezu! It's raining. It's kitchen. Help! 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 Anybody there? Oh, who is there? Hey guys, are you there? Is it a game? Who is it?
Hey, it's me. Don't be scared. I'm a local. Just heard your voice. Needing help?
I have lost my friends and I can't find them.
I saw three girls heading towards the north.
You heard the sound?
Yes, just let's get out of here. I'll explain it for you. My cottage is near here. You can stay there until your friends come back. Have a seat near the fire.
Thank you. Please tell me more about the strange sound.
There were researchers about this phenomenon. They say it's a type of cricket which locals call kiss or chess. They make screaming sounds. Have some hot milk.
Oh, thank you.
Mitra.
Help!
Are they your friends?
Oh, yes. Hey, guys, I'm here. Oh, thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
أم كيف يتقلقل بين أطباقها وأنت تعلم صدقا أم كيف تزجره زبانيتها وهو يناديك يا رب أم كيف يرجو فضلك في عتقه منها فتتركه فيها مشبه لما عملت به الموحدين من برك وإحسانك.
Dear listeners, as you have been previously with us, we were discussing this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. أم كيف يتقلقل بين أطباقها وأنت تعلم صدقه؟ How should he be convulsed among its levels while you know his sincerity? أم كيف تزجره زبانيتها وهو يناديك يا رب؟ Or how should its keepers torture him while he calls out to you, O Lord? أم كيف يرجو فضلك في عتقه منها فتتركه فيها؟ Or how should he be having hope of your bounty in freeing him from it while you abandon him within it? هيهات, far be it from you. We started our discussion over this part of the Kumail supplication with the importance of understanding the vast ocean of mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Among the wonders of His mercy is that His holy essence gives and grants great blessings for the few acts of the servants on condition that they realize that they are in total need of the Almighty Allah, and they bring that need toward Him. As we summarized in the previous episodes, the reality of prayer is the ontological need to Allah, the perception of that need, and the presentation of that need before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. about the first step of reaching Almighty Allah's mercy, we said that this ontological need, be it realized by the owner, by the servant or not, will attract the Almighty Allah's mercy. And this is a norm, a sunnah, of the Almighty Allah, which is functioning in everything in the world. His divinity, Almighty Allah, is beyond any miserliness. Accordingly, the difference in the levels of mercy is due to the difference in the levels of the need and indigence, and in shorter terms, in the capacity of the servants. The more they realize they are in need of Almighty Allah, the more their capacity is. The land needs heat, water and air for its growth, and Allah the Exalted grants it with what it needs. This need of land is an ontological request and demand. Whatever a thing is in need of and demands by nature, that request and that demand is in ontological language. So Allah the Exalted says in this regard, everyone in the heavens and the earth asks him, and every day he is in a different state. كُلُّ يَوْمٍ هُوَ فِي شَأْنٍ. And that which a thing needs and demands ontologically is never left unanswered.
My Lord, then how could he remain in torments when he hopefully relies upon your past forbearance, compassion and mercy? And how can the fire cause him suffering when he hopes for your grace and mercy? And how can its roaring flames shower him when you hear his voice and see his plight?
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
To have a better idea what this ontological need before presenting it before the Almighty Allah, let us have a look once again at this part of the supplication. أَمْ كَيْفَ يَشْتَمِلُ عَلَيْهِ زَفِيرُهَا وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ ضَعْفَهُ. How its groaning fire encompass him while you know his weakness. And continuing, أَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ صِدْقَهُ وَهُوَ يُنَادِيكَ يَا رَبَّهُ. You know his sincerity and he is calling out to you, O Lord. Of course, when we look at the part وَأَنْتَ تَعْلَمُ ضَعْفَ, you realize and you know his sincerity, it does not imply that this need is perceived and presented before the Almighty Allah. It seems that it is only referring to the first step, the need and the ontological relationship between that faqr and the mercy of the Almighty Allah. But when we put it aside, the other parts of this supplication, when the word sidq and sincerity is brought forth, we understand that this need is at least in the second level. This need is at least realized by the servant. And this is more than just the first level, which was the fact that the need, be it realized or not, ontologically attracts the mercy of Allah. When a suckling baby who has no knowledge of her own self becomes thirsty and the thirst becomes unbearable for her, Allah the Exalted, it is the one who teaches her to express her need by crying and weeping. And he, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is the one who awakens the sympathy of her father and mother towards her, so that they may attend to her and give her drink. So the thirst and the hunger of the infant attracts the mercy and affection of the parents because it is the Almighty Allah's mercy that is attracted without there being any request and demand from the infant. In the same way, the pain and the difficulties a sick person undergoes invokes the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be the most close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.